care.
Okay. So we're on Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. And you can count up 15 lines from the bottom.
Okay.
V'chein ki asa rabba. So let's just review what we know until now. The Gemara tells the story about Zeira. He was a host for many of the Chachamim, and he told Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi about his father Levi, that his father had a very interesting and important custom. And what he did was, he used to take a cloth on Erev Yom Kippur, he used to soak it in water, and before Yontif, he would squeeze out the water, and it would make it a little bit dry, but it was still moist. And on Yom Kippur itself, he would wipe his face and his hands and his feet with this wet or moist mispachas, this cloth, this kerchief, and he wasn't choshesh, he wasn't concerned about the Iser Rechitza. Not only that, but on Erev Tisha B'Av, he would be even more mekil, and he would soak it in water. He didn't have to squeeze it out because there was no Iser Schita. And on Tisha B'Av itself, he would use this wet kerchief and wipe his eyes. Well, that's what we did last time. V'chein, and we have a similar story, ki asa Rabba Bar Mori. Rabba Bar Mori came, and Omar, and he declared the following halacha. He said, "Be'erev Tisha B'Av mevim lo mitpachas v'shoroso b'mayim." So on Erev Tisha B'Av, he would soak this kerchief in water. So now the kerchief is absorbed with water. Umeinicha tachas mirashosav, in order to make sure that it doesn't dry up overnight, because again he wanted to use it to wipe himself in the morning, he would put it under his head, so it was already covered, it wasn't exposed to the dry air. Ulamachar, and on Tisha B'Av itself, mekaneach panav yadav v'raglav. He would wash his face, his hands, and his feet. The problem is with Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur, there's a problem of schita. There's no issue of schita on Yom Kippur. So if you have, on Tisha B'Av. So on Tisha B'Av, if you have a kerchief that's sopping wet, and in the worst case scenario, you might squeeze out the water. That's not a problem on Tisha B'Av. But Erev Yom Kippur, if he did the same thing, he's got a problem, because if he leaves it sopping wet, he's going to violate the Isur Schita. Is there from Mevim lo mitpachas shoros of b'mayim, and then osasa kimin kelim neguvim. He's got to dry it out like a dry rag, and that he has to do erev Yom Kippur. Ulamachar on Yom Kippur itself, mavira al gabi enov, and then he can cover his eyes with it and sort of rinse off his eyes a little bit with the moisture that's left in the kerchief. So fundamentally, the premise, or the principle, I should say, the principle applies equally to both Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. The only difference between the two is that with regard to Yom Kippur, we have to take into consideration, in addition to the Rechitza consideration, we have to take into consideration the Schita problem. And therefore, we have to make sure to do the Schita on Erev Yom Kippur. But otherwise, it seems that Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur are equal. Omalei Rav Yaakov, Rav Yirmiyah bar Tachlifta, bar Tachleifa, Ifcha Amrit Loch. The way I heard it, it was just the opposite. In other words, we were being more machmir in the original formula on Yom Kippur because of Isur Schita. He says, on the contrary, we should be more machmir on Tisha B'Av than we should be on Yom Kippur. We could be more mekil, paradoxically, on Yom Kippur than we are with regard to Tisha B'Av. And lehefach, I heard it ipcha, that on Tisha B'Av you'd have to squeeze out the kerchief early enough before you wipe your face with it. And Yom Kippur, you don't have to do so. So I have a footnote here. He says, why would there be a greater chumrah on Tisha B'Av than there would be on Yom Kippur? And he answers the following, which he quotes in the name of the Me'iri. He says that on Tisha B'Av, we find a requirement of miut ta'anug kichol ha'efshar. He's got to limit or circumscribe his pleasure to the maximum. For example, the Gemara later on is going to say that with regard to sandal, there was a certain kula on Yom Kippur which might not apply to Tisha B'Av. We're going to get to that a little later, but just to give you an idea of what's coming around the bend on Yom Kippur, we might be matir a certain kind of a shoe that's not made of leather, and although it's comfortable to wear that shoe, but it doesn't have the status of a minol, and therefore it's okay on Yom Kippur. It's not nilas hasandal. Whereas on Tisha B'Av, because it gives you pleasure, it's going to be included in the five inuyim in the ilas hasandal. So what we're trying to establish here is that there's a greater chumra in Tisha B'Av, and this is paradoxical because Tisha B'Av, of course, is only the Rabbanan. You know, Yom Kippur is Doraisa. I don't know, we don't know if the Inuyim on Yom Kippur Doraisa, but Yom Kippur itself is Doraisa. And yet, paradoxically, we're going to be more Mekel on Yom Kippur with regard to certain Nilas Asadl situations. And here in this Ibcha Amrit Lon, we're going to be more makel with regard to Rechitza. We're going to allow you to use something that has moisture in it to wipe yourself, and on Tisha B'Av we're going to have to squeeze out all the water. And the Tosus Yeshanim here writes that Chachamim Asu Chizuk Divrei Chacham Tzrichim Chizuk Yoser Mishal Torah. We find sometimes when there are Rabbanan instituted Gzeira, they're even more machmir in that Gzeira than they are in the Torah law. And why is that? Because we don't want people to be Mekil in an Issa D'Rabbanan. Right? We saw this Svara, I don't know if you remember, a half a year ago, at the beginning of Masechta Beitza with regard to Yontif, that sometimes you have to be more machmir on Yontif than on Shabbos, because people have a tendency to be more Mekil on Yontif. That's why Nolad is more Chomedic on Yontif than it is on Shabbos. I'm just giving you an example, but I mean this principle is a Shas principle, it applies all over. However, he quotes the Netziv here in the footnote, and this I wanted to call to your attention. The Netziv writes that this sugya of Rabbi Yaakov reflects the shita that Inuyim on Yom Kippur are only midrabanan. Okay. So let's assume that Inui Rechitza is only an Issa D'Rabbanan Yom Kippur, but so what? Why should it be more Mekil than Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av is also Midrabbanan. He says, Yesh Lachmir Yosef B'Tisha B'Av She'isuro Midivrei Kabbalah V'ili Yom Kippur Eino Isuro El Midivrei Sofer. Between Doraisa and Drabbanans, we have different levels over here. Your classic Drabbanan is defined as Divrei Sofer. On the other extreme, you have Divrei Torah. In the middle, you have something called Divrei Kabbalah. So if you open up Zechariah Novi, you'll read all about Tisha B'Av and other tinyos. So that upgrades Tisha B'Av, as far as the Inuyim are concerned, to a more strict level than Yom HaKippurim. Because Yom HaKippurim is only Midivrei Sofer. I'm just pointing out, the Gemara is going to reject this in just a second, but it's a very fascinating Hava Mina that occupied the minds of the great giants of Halacha. Why would we be more machmir in Tisha B'Av to make sure that we do schita on this mitpachas than we are on Yom Kippur? And we have two answers. Either because Chacham Asu Chizuk L'Divreihem Yosef Yishal Torah, Enochinami, in and of itself Yom Kippur is more chomer than Tisha B'Av, but dafka because Tisha B'Av falls short by comparison to Yom Kippur, they have to do a Chizuk. Or the way the Netziv will have it, that in and of itself Yom Kippur is more kal than Tisha B'Av, because Tisha B'Av has the level of an Issa Midivrei Kabbalah, means we derive from Tanakh, whereas Yom Kippur is a pure Divrei Sofer. Just wanted to point out. In any event, the Gemara immediately rejects this. The Gemara says, Ve'osivnach, which means we ask a question and we disprove your thesis. It's impossible, says the Gemara, to maintain that Tisha B'Av is more chomer than Yom Kippur. On the contrary, Yom Kippur we have to be more machmir, and therefore we have to require schita on Erev Yom Kippur. And why is that so? Says the Gemara, schita. Not because the Iser Inui and the Iser Chitza is more chomer on Yom Kippur than it is on Tisha, but they're all equal. The only difference is that if you leave this kerchief sopping wet on Yom Kippur and you use it to wash yourself with, or on Yom Kippur, you have a chash, you might violate the Isur Melacha of Schita, which doesn't apply on Tishma. So the Maskana seems to be, if I understand the Gemara correctly, that Yom Kippur and Tishma B'Av are equal in the eyes of the law, as far as the Isur Inui is concerned, in this case with Chitza. We'll see about Nilus HaSandal in a minute. But the only difference is that insofar as there's Isur Melacha on Yom Kippur, which doesn't exist on Tisha B'Av, in this case where you're sopping, you have a cloth that's sopping wet, you have to be more machmir on Yom Kippur because of the Isur Schita as one of the Melachos. Okay, so that more or less closes the sugya that we learned, that we started last time. Now, what we're doing now is we're entering into a Gemara that has nothing to do with Masechta Yoma or Yom HaKippurim, but the Gemara is going to present a list of questions that were brought in front of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. One of them is going to be relevant to Yom HaKippurim. The one we're going to start now is not relevant to Yom HaKippurim, but that's the style of the Shas. Amar Rav Menashe bar Tachlifta, Amar Rav Amram, Amar Rav bar Chana, Shalu es Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. What was the question here that came in front of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas? So Rav Moshe, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to have much to add to this Gemara because I never learned Bechoros. In yeshivas, you should know, amongst the Lamdim, Bechoros is considered up there in the top Masechtos. Like as if all of Lamdus is in Masechta Bechoros. So I really can't give you much insight into this Gemara. It has to do with what's called Netilas Rishus, meaning smich. There are two types of smicha, right? There's one smicha which is inherited or transmitted each mi pi each back to Moshe Rabbeinu, correct? And for a real Chal Hashem Hora, which means that you have to interpret the Torah itself, you require that smicha that goes back, that's called the Mesores of the Torah, that goes back unbroken chain to Moshe Rabbeinu. Then there's a different kind, and so that's called the Heter Hora, and that needs smicha. Then there's a different kind of Heter Hora, where you're not changing the halacha, you're not interpreting the Torah, you're just applying the Torah's rules to a particular case. And that's called Yatir in Bechoros, meaning when a firstborn animal is brought, the Torah requires that Bechor, because of its Kedusha, be brought on the Mizbeach. And it's eaten by the Bailit, it's not eaten by the Kohen. Now, the only way of, in a sense, I guess you could say, circumventing the law of Bechor is by doing what's called a Heter Bechoros, which means that the Chacham is going to tell you that this Mum is a mum kavua. It's not a mum over. It's not a minor injury. What do you say?
Temporary.
It's not temporary. It's permanent. Now, in this case, you're not changing or interpreting the law itself. So you really don't need for this the Netilas Rishus of your Rebbe who goes back with an unbroken chain to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Gemara nevertheless insists that because of the serious nature of Heter Bechoros, of determining that this is Baal Mum, there is, I'm going to use a very Balamatish term, there's a quasi-Hora, which might require the Tilos Rishus. Meaning, this individual knows the laws of Bechoros inside out. You know, you can test them. He's a Yochid Mumcha. But nevertheless, he doesn't have a smicha with regard to being Matir Bechor. So the Gemara now is going to ask Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, do you need smicha? Do you need, again, it's not really smicha, but you need what's called Netilas Rishus in order to be Matir Bechor. Let's see the Gemara inside. Sholu es Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. Zaken. Zaken here has nothing to do with his age, right? It's a reflection of his knowledge. V'yoshev b'yeshiva. He has enough knowledge to sit on the Beis Din HaGadol, on the Sanhedrin itself. I mean, he has smicha. But that smicha, l'chora, for some reason, the Gemara thinks, would not extend to Heter Bechoros. And even if he has smicha for Hora, he's a Zaken, if he would be, for example, if he would rebel against the court, he would be a zakei mamre. But nevertheless, tzorech litol rishus lahatir b'choros. Does he need some sort of heter, a license, in order to be matir b'chor? Now it's interesting that the heter that we're talking about here is not from a rebbe, you know, not from one of the chachmei amesora, but it's from the nasi. And this is a brand new halacha of netilas rishus. Again, normally netilas rishus and hora has nothing to do with the nasi. You don't have to go to the nasi in order to get netilas rishus. But for some reason, the Gemara thinks in the Hava Mina that the nasi must give rishus for heter b'choros. Yatir b'choros yatir.
Who's the nasi?
The nasi, there were 71 members of the Sanhedrin, and the top banana was called the nasi. He presided over the entire Sanhedrin. And there are dinim in Kavod, for example, if you open up the Rambam in Perek Hay, or Perek Vav, excuse me, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, you'll see all the special dinim of Kavod HaNasi. In fact, the Gemara establishes that Nasi Shemochal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Mochal, whereas other Talmidei Chacham can be Mochal on their Kavod, but Nasi cannot.
Is this a Nasi of the base in Bilkom, our base name, and then you had a Nasi of political power?
Yeah, that's why I don't know. Which Nasi are we talking about? Let's see if the Gemara indicates one way or the other. You know, which Nasi?
But Nasi is referring to it was in Bavel. That was a political.
Right, that was the exilarch, or whatever
only
you call
in,
it.
Only in Bavel.
Right, here I think we're talking about the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael who presided over the Bezdin. That's why I think.
Nasi, they called him Reish Galus.
He says in the footnote that Heter Bechor, Hainuk, Shenimtza Mum, they found a Mum in this animal, Mivim also. Eitzel Chacham, Vachacham Kovea in Yesh Bazem Mum, Kedei Lahatir Osa Bachila B'lo Akrova. That the Mum is Mafkir, the Ketushas Bechor, because it's a Mum Kavua. Oh, Eino Tzor. Maybe he doesn't need the Tus Rishus? And the Gemara goes on to explain the question.
We're talking about the time of the Beis Mikdash stood, of course.
Right. Right,
it's got to be in Eretz Yisrael.
Right, by Kedushas Bechor.
Of course.
My Kami Boilahu. The Gemara says, I don't really understand your question. Since this person is an expert, he should be able to be Matir Bechor on his own. That's called a Yachid Mumche. And why couldn't this Zaken be Matir the Bechor? What's this Havamina that he needs Netilas Rishus? And it's possible that at this point in the Gemara doesn't even know that we're talking about the Kvod HaNasi here. The Gemara is just operating under the premise that you're talking about the fact that somehow his smicha is not authoritative enough to allow him to be Matir Bechor. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood my question. Hachi Kami Boiler. This is what I meant to ask you. Ki ha di omer Rav Idi Bar Ovin. It's based on the principle, the statement of Rav Idi Bar Ovin. Dovar Zeh. There is a concept of getting the license from the Nasi in order to judge this case. He nichu lahem levei nesia kidei lizgader bo. Meaning they were looking for ways of fulfilling the mitzvah of Kvod HaNasi. And it's interesting that Kvod HaNasi has two levels. On one hand, Kvod HaNasi are strict dinim. Right, the Gemara says that although for a Rebbe you only have to stand up Tov Tal Anamis, you know, or with regard to a Nasi, if you see him even a million miles away, once you see him, you have to stand up for him. And there are other dinim that there's no mechila. But those are strict regulations that are legislated by the law. Above and beyond those strict regulations, there's a kium, there's a fulfillment, which is... I don't misunderstand me, I'm going to use the word amorphous, but what I mean by amorphous means that Chazal could decide how to enhance the kiyum of Kvod HaNasi. There are strict standard rules, Chok V'lo Yavre, as we say, you know, those are not changeable. But then there's a whole gray area where the Chachamim could institute different kinds of methods of fulfilling and obtaining the kiyum of Kvod HaNasi. And that's the phrase that he nichu lahem levei nesia. In other words, allow the Bei Nesia, you know, that's the office of the Nasi, to Kedelis Gaderbo, to expand the kavod for the Nasi, and therefore Tzarech Litol Rishus. The manifestation or the opportunity to manifest an expanded kvod Nasi and be Mekayim this mitzvah bidura would be by asking Rishus from the Nasi to be Matir Bechor. Oh, Dilma, or should we say, Kevin the Zakim Yoshe B'Shiva, knows he's an exceptional Yachid Mumcha, and he knows and he has experience. Eino Tzarech, we don't need it. Maybe the Chachamim never instituted this requirement to ask Rishus Mishun Kvod HaNasi to be Matir Bechor. Amen Rav Tzadik Bachaluk Al Raglov. Now, whenever two Edom come into Beis Din, it says V'yamdu Lifnei Elohim, which means they stand in front of the Dayanim to give testimony. So Rav Tzadok stood up and he gave testimony. V'yamani declared, Ani Ra'isi Es Rav Yossi Ben Zimra Shezaken V'yoshev V'yeshiva Haya. I can testify about a certain man by the name of Rav Yossi who was a Zaken, he was a Yochid Mumcha. V'yamad B'mala Mizikeno Shalzeh. And nevertheless, he, even as great as he was, and if I understand correctly, you check me out here in your translation, because here he doesn't translate it. I think what he's saying is that he was even greater than the Nasi himself at that time. He was superior in his knowledge of Torah than the Nasi.
And the grandfather of the current Nasi.
Oh, he says the grandfather of the current Nasi.
He quotes Rashi.
Oh, so I'm not sure why that's important. Okay. But in any event, maybe that's a way of exaggerating, so to speak, or dramatizing how great Rav Yossi was. And nevertheless, Natal Rishus Lahatir Bechoros. In other words, he was even greater than the Zayda of the Nasi. And yet, he did not go ahead and function to be Matir Bechoros until he got explicit, you know, Rishus, he got a signature, you know, he put up a Tuda with the Nasi signature that he could be Matir Bechoros. So what we see from this story that Rav Tzadok is telling us is that no matter how great you are as a Chacham, nevertheless, you need to be Notel Rishus from the Nasi. And again, I don't think this is a strict letter of the law. I don't think that this is the ma'akev. This would make it impossible without the heter and the rishus from the nasi to be matir the bechor. But this is the way that chachamim instituted and experienced the kvod hanasi. That's how they demonstrated the kvod hanasi. Amalei Rabbi Abba, give me just one more minute just to get the picture. Lo kal chayamais. That's not the story. This transmission of the story is not accurate. It's not true that Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra actually asked the Nasi for a heter because of Kvod HaNasi. El Kachal Yomaisa. This is the true, genuine transmission of the story. Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra Kohen Hoya. The issue is a totally different issue. This is what you call Nageya B'dover. And sometimes we exclude a posek to be Mora Hora if he gets benefit from the final decision, the verdict that he hands down. In this case, Rav Yossi had vested interests in deciding whether this Bechor was Kadosh B'Kedushas Bechor and he had to be brought on the Mizbeach, or whether it wasn't Kadosh B'Kedushas Bechor. V'hachi kami boile. This was the question that was asked. Oh, Shalom Aleichem Hawaii. Good. He asked the Nasi a halachic shaila. In other words, it wasn't that he was asking the Nasi for Rishus to be Matir the Bechor. He didn't need Rishus to be Matir Bechor. But he needed to know whether he was kosher to be Matir the Bechor. Mm-hmm. Do you follow the difference? Mm-hmm. In other words, let's say if he wasn't a Kohen, he would have gone ahead and be Matir the Bechor without asking Rishus from the Nasi. There's no quote on Nasi that generates a chiv to ask the Nasi. He asked the Nasi not Midin Nasi, or Midin Kavod HaNasi, but Midin Talmud Chacham. The Nasi is a great scholar, And he didn't want to paskin the shayla for himself.
What was the problem?
Okay, that's, you have to take a deep breath. We're getting to it in just a minute. But I'm just pointing out that according to the new transmission of what exactly went on there, this is Rabbi Abba's transmission, he was asking a shayla to the greatest Talmud Chacham of the Sanhedrin. And what was he asking? Halacha ki Rabbi Meir, O Dilma halacha ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. I skipped a few words. How do we paskin in the machlokas, the controversy between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? What was their machlokas? So let's go back to the words that I skipped. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, the Omar, Chashud bidavar lo dono velo meido. Anyone who has vested interests, as great as the Chacham he is lo dono. He doesn't have the ability to hand down a verdict. And we'll see exactly how this kicks in the case of a Kohen with regard to Bechar. Mm-hmm. O Dilma, or is the halakha of Shimon Gamliel, the Omer Neman hu al shel chavero, that a Kohen can paskin on the Bechar of his friend, and we don't consider it a psul of Nogea B'dover. When do we apply or activate the psul of Nogea B'dover with regard to a Kohen who wants to paskin on a Bechar? That's only Eino Neman al Shal Atzmo. He's not paskining on the Bechar of his friend, but he's paskining on the Bechar that he owns, that was born to his animal. Meaning, there's a machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel about the psul of Nogea B'dover as far as the ability of a chacham, of a zaken, to be matir b'char. Is that psul of Nogea B'dover limited to the Kohen's own personal possession, his b'char? Or do we extend it, as Rabbi Meir would have it, even to the case of b'char shal chavera? So let's now ask the question, why is the Kohen... Now, this Talmud Chacham, this Zaken, happens to be a Kohen. He didn't have to be a Kohen, right? But he happens to be a Kohen. Why is he chashud as an Ogea B'dover? What vested interest does he have to be Matir or Bechor? And the answer is the following. As long as the animal has no mum, then the Kohen is going to have to get involved in the Avoda. Let's say he's the Kohen who's serving in the Beis HaMikdash. The Bailin, the Yisrael, brings the Bechar to the Kohen. And he says, you know what? My friend, Rabbi Kohen, you know, you have to do all the Avoda. That's called Tipul. But you can't eat it, because the Kohen has no right to eat the Bechar. Bechar is what's called Kachim Kalim, which is Nechal Bailin. Actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Mishnah Zvach that we say every morning, do you have any sort of machzor or siddur around? Right? So what does it say here about Bechar? Trouble is we don't say, who has time to...
Say Karbanos.
So I think it says here Shlomim Kachim Kalim, right? Okay, and a Bukhar Vamasa Pesa Kachim Kalim, right?
Bukhar Nechal.
Right, Nechal Kona means, if I'm not mistaken, that. Just 1 second. Yeah, hold on to this. Take a look at that. So wait a minute. Maybe let me go back to the drawing. But I apologize. Okay, he says the following. What we're trying to understand why Rabbi Meir holds that the Kohen is chashut. Just 1 second. No. Trying to figure out this. Kemen shekonim chshudimim lahatir b'chor shalom kedin. He calls manche ein bo mum al kohen li tofel bo v'eino yochol li ochlo l'chein ein kohen yochol b'shum ofen ladun u'lahatir b'choros. So I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. He says that the Kohen is not allowed to eat from the Bechor if it belongs to someone else. Can I borrow this for just a minute? Let's just see if he adds anything here.
Maybe the Bechor gets...
How does this go? From it goes from the right to the left, yeah. I assume, because it's English. So let's turn... No.
I'm on the right block.
Yeah, so what? Why don't I see this? It goes from left to right. Okay, I'm sorry. I got to get oriented here.
Upside down, I get confused.
Yeah, he says a Kohen is suspected with regard to firstborn animals. Okay, but tell me why is he
49? I think the
Baal
gets the
Meiser
Behema. Maybe that's
the Meiser. Kohen who received it must care for it at his own expense in the interim.
No,
it's going to automatically a sufficient lying about a blemish, even afflicted. Okay, so he tells you. Okay, here, let me read to you this. The Bechor, the firstborn male offspring of a kosher domestic animal like a cow, a sheep, and a goat, becomes sanctified at birth and must be given to a Kohen. The Kohen then offers it up as a sacrifice in the Mikdash and eats its sacred meat. If, however, the Bechor sustains a permanent blemish, as determined by an expert, the Bechor is disqualified as a sacrifice and becomes the Kohen's personal property. Well, that's what I missed. All right. So Bechor Bal Mum falls back into the normal category of a Bechor, and the Bechor is a Matnas Kahuna and is given to the Kohen.
The rest of that is also interesting.
I'm just going slowly, one by one. So we'll get to this. So this is when the Mikdash stood. So the Kohen, by being posel the Karbon, now takes over the Bechor. And it's subject to shechita and achila because it doesn't have kedushas bechor. It's bechor balmu.
It belongs to the Kohen.
Now, in Rabbi Elazar's time, which was after the destruction of the temple, okay, we asked this question before Shalom. He says a bechor could not be offered on the mizbeach. A bechor, therefore, because it has kedushas bechor, but you can't bring it on the hakrav in the mizbeach. There's no mizbeach. It had to be left to pasture. Right, roach yistayev, that's the Gemara's language, until it develops a permanent mum. And then it's slaughtered as a non-sacred meat, meaning it has no kedushas bechor, because now it has a mum. Now, does one have to receive authorization from the nasi before he could examine a bechor and declare its blemish permanent? That's what they were asking Rabbi Elazar. So the final maskana is that he doesn't have to ask the Nasi. But if he's a Kohen, now we have a machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Meir. He says the following. Since nowadays the Bechor has to be left to pasture until it develops a blemish, at which time it becomes permitted for consumption, therefore the Kohen who receives the Bechor must take care for it at his own expense in the interim. In other words, he's going to have to sort of raise this whole animal until finally he gets the status of a balmu. A Kohen, therefore, is under suspicion of lying about a blemish.
In order that he should get the behemo.
Right, and maybe, and not only that, but he's going to alleviate himself of this expense of shmira, you know, of waiting till the animal finally becomes a balmu. And as you point out, Avi, if it becomes a balmu, then not only is he alleviated from all the responsibility to guard this animal, but he also now can take the animal and possess it and shecht it and eat it. He might even be suspect of inflicting the blemish himself to gain access to this animal. So Rabbi Meir maintains that since a Kohen is suspected vis-a-vis Bechor in his possession, he's not even believed with regard to the Bechoros of others, hence he is ineligible to serve as an examiner of Bechoros. Rav Shim Gamliel, on the other hand, maintains that Kohen is suspected with regard to a Bechor that belongs to him. He stands to benefit from its becoming blemished. But if it doesn't belong to him, he doesn't stand to benefit. Thus, a Kohen may serve as an examiner of Bechoros. Okay, so again, this... As I told you at the outset, you know, you really have to be...
That's not what we do today, by the way, with a Bechor on the Yishuvim and the Kibbutzim. What they do today is one of the four haramas that we have in our religion. What they do today is they sell the ear to a goy once it's as it's being born. And once it's no longer a single baal,
so it doesn't have kedushas before. Sell to a goy. Okay. Interesting. Anyway, Pashutley, so just to finish the story, so what did the Nasi finally paskin for him? Halacha of Shimon Gamliel? That means that a Kohen is believed to be matir a Bechor.
So we said that
that's the final conclusion.
After the Beis Miklush, the bowel of the animal let the animal roam around until he had got a mum.
Yeah.
What can you get a mum? And why should you get a mum for?
They would eat.
No, because they wanted to do something with this Bechor. Now it has Kedushas Bechor. What are you going to do with it?
When you talk about while they had the temple,
you have no possibility yet of bringing it on the Mizbeach. And it's cut off, so you can't eat it.
Why would you bring it up to the field to get a mum? Help. Why would you get a mum in a field for?
Oh, I don't know exactly what happens. It starts eating, you know, nails or something, whatever. Swallows a nail.
Like to have, there was... They would eat whatever's in the open.
How do you know they got a mum?
It didn't happen overnight, Shalom. It took a long time.
How do you know they have to happen at all?
Somehow they knew.
I guess they fed it nails. I don't know. The sukkah, I mean, boilahu. Okay, so again, all this is a tangent. I was thinking you should know of skipping this because we're not going to finish the parak anyway. Okay, sukkah mi boile. Now we're getting back to Yom HaKippurim. And another shaila that was asked to Rabbi Loza ben Pedos. Ma'ulat seis besandol shel sham. Now we're turning to Daf Ayin Ches Amid Beis. And he says on the bottom, based on Rashi, that sham is a kana. Kana means a reed that grows in water. And it's not like leather. Yom HaKippurim. So can I get a hold of one of these sandals, I guess you'd call it, that are made of reeds and wear it on Yom Kippur, and it doesn't violate the Isur of Nilus HaSandal because it's not made of or. So he quotes the Ran over here, Hasafiku im nechshav minol. Now it's the halacha has a status, an object called a minol. The imtim tzalom she'eno Nechshav Minol, even if you're going to tell me, he's quoting the Ran, that it's not considered a Minol, it doesn't have a Chalushay Minol, you couldn't use it for Chalitza, for example. Nevertheless, Mesafkele Ulay Yeoser Mishumshu Mugain Al Raglo. So basically, what the Gemara is presenting in a suffix to Rebbe Lozman Pedos, the Gemara is vacillating. How do you define the Iser Inu Yom HaKippurim with regard to Nils Sandal? Is it an Iser of sandal and a minol, we'll call it minol, or no, it's an iser of putting something that protects your feet. If it protects your feet, even if it's not a minol in universal halachic terms, it doesn't qualify as a minol, nevertheless it should be also. Omar Yitzchok Bar Nachmeni Al Raglov, again he's going to testify what he saw.
Which means it goes barefoot, nothing is...
Well, no, we're going to see that certain things don't really protect your feet. You know, we're going to have different madrigas. The Omar, Anira Isias Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Sheyotza Besandal Shal Sha'am B'Yom HaKippurim. I have a Maisa Rav, and that proves that if it's not called a Minol, even though it does protect your feet, nevertheless, it's Mutter. V'Aminolei. And I myself asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Tainis Tzibur Mai. Do you remember we discussed earlier that it could be that the din of a tainis tzibur is more chamur than the din as far as the inui is concerned, and the Gemara in Tainis on Daf Yud Beis and Beis establishes that the inuyim on noagim even on a tainis tzibur on a public fast day, for example, let's say there's no rain, so they declare a fast day and there's a whole seder of tainios, and at one point, if they're still not getting rain, they have a full-fledged Tainis Tzibur with an Isur Nilsa sandal. Can I wear a sandal Shal Sham, that's the Gemara Safek, on a Tainis Tzibur? In other words, the Gemara is assuming the possibility that we're more Mekil on a Tainis we're more Mekil on Yom Kippur and we're more Machmir on a Tainis Tzibur. So once again, the Tosi Sharim says, because Divrei Sofrim, Tzrichim Chizuk Yosef Mishel Torah, Kadesh Lo Yizal Zulubahem, that we have to be more machmir in Tainus Tzibur, even though in and of itself it's less chamur. But then he quotes another approach, which I think we saw in the Netziv, that perhaps a Tainus Tzibur might be even more chamur. And he says, why? Because listen to the language here, which he quotes in the name of the Siach Yitzchak. He says, on a Tainus Tzibur yesh sorach yosel litzayer es atzmo. Masha enke miyom ha-kipurim, kol masha eno b'chlal inui, ha-mechuyov, is adra be'en lis anos bo, en litzayer es atzmo, el shetorch la'aneg es yontiv. Now, it's a mitzvah, we're in a tension here between the mitzvah of Tainug, of Oneg Yontif, and the Iser of Inui. So to the extent to which it's technically Asur Mishum Inui, we're going to overlook, you know, we're going to neutralize the mitzvah of Oneg. But once you tell me that it's strictly not considered a violation of Inui, because this is not a sandal, this is not a minol, then just to impose pain and affliction upon yourself, that would be undermining the mitzvah of Oneg Yontif on Yom Kippur. However, in the case of a Tainus Tzibur, where there's no mitzvah of Oneg, on the contrary, the nature of the Iser of Inui on Tisha B'Av or any Tainus Tzibur is Litzayer es Atzmo. Therefore, by using these comfortable sandals that are made of reeds, you will be undermining the mitzvah of Litzayer es Atzmo, to inflict pain on yourself, and therefore it might be awesome. Amali, but Rabbi Shua Belevi's response was lo shna. It's not like you thought that we have to be more machmir on Tainus, but rather the din of Tainus is exactly equivalent to the din of Yom Kippur, and you're allowed to wear a sandal shel sham on a Tainus Tzibur, which might mean that the maskan of the sugya here is that there's no din on a Tainus that you have to be mitzayer yourself, but rather the din of Tainus, the Tainus Tzibur engenders an Iser Inui, which is identical to the class, to the category of Inui on Yom Kippur.
What we're talking about here is not Shivasa Batan was an Asar Bekeves.
I don't know. You have to, at the bottom,
it says we're talking about the Tainasin for
for Geshamim, right. But I would extend it to Tisha B'Av as well. And possibly even to all Tainus. I'll tell you why. Because initially, every Tainus has an Iser Inui. Later on, they were Mekil in most of the Tainios, and they weren't Mekil in Tisha B'Av. But it could be that all Tainios really have the same status as far as Inui.
Didn't they want the other four Tainios also to be from the night before? Originally?
Correct, and then they were Matir the night, and then on Tisha B'Av they weren't Matir the night. I don't know. It's more complicated than that, Abi, because the Gemara says, "Bisman shei shalom, v'yei this ein shalom." It's all sugi Rosh Hashanah. Omar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Nira Isias Rabba Loza Demin Ninveh. Interesting. I didn't know there were Jews living in Ninveh. She yotza b'sandal shel sham b'tainis tzibur. Okay, so we know now that Rabbi Yeshua Levi's response to the original question of the Chachamim, okay, we don't know who asked Rabbi Shuben Levi, was accepted la'alocha by Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. Rabbi Bar Chana already is talking about Rabbi Lazar, who probably lived sometime, you know, in close proximity to Rabbi Shuben Levi, like an early Amora, and he actually wore on a Tainus Tzibur a sandal shel sham.
It was Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Achmeni who asked Rabbi Shuben Levi.
It was?
Yeah.
I don't know. Here it says, "Kami Boiluhu." Oh! Kami Boiluhu is referring to Rabbi Lozman Pedos.
Right.
Vaminale. Okay, and I asked him the following question: "Biyom Akipurim Mai? Should I apply this heter and permit wearing these reeds on my feet? This shoe of reeds." Reed's shoe, I guess you call it, on Yom Kippur. My, what's the din? Amali, so Belozeretz is lo shna, in other words, the din of Yom Kippurim is identical to that of a Tainus Tzibur. If it's not a violation of Tainus Tzibur as far as Nil Sandal, it's not on Yom Kippur as well. Now, what about other kinds of shoes? So Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, Nafik, he used to wear on Yom Kippur, Dehitni are shoes made of palm leaves, which is very similar to sham. Abai Nofik be Dehutzi. This is made of kapot tmarim, you know, some sort of lulavim. They come from the date tree. Rav and Nofik, he went out, bidikule, which are anofim dakim shal dakal tzair, shal osimihem sali nitzarim. They used to use these branches of trees to make some sort of baskets with them, and they also made shoes out of them. None of these shoes had leather on them. Rabbi Barav Huna Karich Suja Akare, it seems like he was even more machmir than the others. He would just tie a cloth, sudra is a cloth or a kerchief, around his feet, and that's how he v'nofik, that's how he went out on Yom Kippur. And I was thinking that although Rabbi Barav Huna is being more machmir perhaps than Nilus Sandal, but nevertheless he's being mekil in allowing you to walk around with this sudra on your feet. What do I mean? But that all depends. Just one second. Yeah, we discussed this. There is an Isur Hotzah on Yom Kippur, no? Let's assume for the time being, if this is not ignorance on my part, that just like on Shabbos there's an Isur Hotzah, so too on Yom Kippur there's an Isur Hotzah. I'm going to make that premise. Can you give me some rope on that? Right. The only thing is that Yom Kippur also has a Kedushas Yontif, so then you have to know about Hotzah. But Hotzah and Yontif is Mutta only because it's a Melechus Ochel Nefesh. I don't think we have the head to Melechus Ochel Nefesh on Yom Kippur. But anyway, let's presume, for argument's sake, that there's an Isur Hotzah on Yom Kippur. If that be the case, Lefiyani is Daiti, Rabbi Barav Huna is being Mekil here, because I don't know that you're allowed to tie things on your body and walk out in Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos, for example, and for that matter on Yom Kippur. I don't know if that's called carrying. Anyway, Masiv Rabbi Rami Bar Chama. So now you're telling me that what? That any shoe that's not made of leather doesn't have a shame minol, and therefore it's mutar on Yom Kippur. And now he quotes he contradicts this law by quoting a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos Amachem Midbeis, Hakitea, right, a person who doesn't have a leg, his leg was amputated, is Yotze, he's allowed to wear in the public domain, Bekav Shalo. Right, kav is some sort of prosthetic. They make a piece. They take a piece of wood and they make a leg out of it. Correct. I mean, you have to be an engineer for this, right? Divrei Rav Meir, and Rav Meir says there's no problem here of hotzah. And why isn't there a problem of hotzah? The answer must be because it's considered like it's a malbush. He's wearing it to kiderech malbush. I don't know, he has a long footnote here, but this is a little bit too complicated for me. He says, Eina kitea mahalech al kav shalo ele de smuchos shekosher leraglov akav osa lechaber leshok lashok rak laharos ki ilu yeshlo regavu toli biavir. I think he's saying here that he's got to tie down this false, you know, limb to his body, because otherwise, if it's just sort of hanging, then it would be a problem of hotzah.
He says here.
Yeah.
He says here. He simplifies it here. According to Rabbi Meir, that it's his shoe. This is his shoe.
But does he mention that he ties it down to his body?
That's, he goes by Rav Yossi, where he said that it's usher. He considers it a mas on Shabbos, because over the people don't have it.
Right, but I'm just pointing out here something that he makes a big deal on. I don't know if you have it there, in the name of Rishonim, that the reason Rabbi Meir is Mekil here, and he considers it a like a malbush, again, he doesn't use the word malbush, is because Shekoshro Leraglo. he actually ties it down to his to the thigh. You know, he has a thigh,
right,
and he puts his arm below the knee, let's say. So he's saying that he ties it down to his body, l'chaber l'shok. And I think he's saying that if there wasn't an act of tying it down to his body, then even Rav Meir would have to agree that he's basically just dragging this along. So I don't know. I'm just pointing out that there's a whole complicated discussion here in the Rishonim. So Rav Yossi says that a person who is wearing this false limb is not allowed to walk into Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos with it, because ain't a royal chol b'nei adam. It's not something that you would consider a malbush or a minol for most people, even though for him he needs it. But Rav Yossi says we have to you have to analyze it and apply the objective standards. We don't look at his particular situation, but rather what another person would consider a minol for himself. Okay, now that's all as far as Shabbos is concerned. What about with regard to Yom Kippur? He says, "V'tani Allah." The Brisa says, "V'shavin," meaning even Rav Meir, even though Rav Meir holds there's no problem with Hotzah, he admits, "Shall also Lotzis be Yom Kippur?" Because on Yom Kippur we have an additional problem. Even if you solve the problem of Minol as far as Malvish is concerned, you still have another problem of Minol as far as the Easter Inui of Ne'ilas HaSandal. So it seems that even something which is not considered a minol as far as Shabbos is concerned, correct? And nevertheless, as far as Yom Kippur is concerned, you're not allowed to wear it. In other words, all the cases that we had before, if you have shoes made out of reeds, made out of palm leaves, made out of lulav branches, and so forth and so on, all these we said are not a minol. And therefore, they're mutar on Yom Kippur. But wait a minute. If v'shavin heim linyan Yom Kippur, meaning that everybody agrees that this false leg is an Isur of Nilas Sandal Yom Kippur, despite the fact that it's not a minol, because it doesn't have any leather in it. And at this point in the Gemara, I think we're assuming that if it doesn't have any leather, it's not a minol. But nevertheless, since it protects the foot and it's comfortable for the foot, therefore it's asur under Nilas HaSandal on Yom Kippur. And this would contradict everything that we've said until now. Because the premise we've been operating with until this point is that if it's not a minol, meaning it doesn't have leather in it, it's mutar on Yom Kippur. And that's why all the Amoraim went out with their different kinds of shoes. But here we're saying that this false limb is asur on Yom Kippur, even if it's mutar on Shabbos, because the Isur Ne'ilas HaSandal is muchach mikan shegam dover sheinu nechshav minol inyan Shabbos mikomakom osel inolo biyom HaKippurim. So if we take, for example, the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that Kav HaKitea is not considered a minol because other people would not normally wear it as a shoe, and therefore you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. So it means fundamentally it's not called a minol. And yet, from desvegan, it's also v'nilas asandal on Yom Kippur. It must be because Yom Kippur, anything that's comfortable and covers the foot and protects you from feeling the ground below the feet, that constitutes a sandal as far as nilas asandal is concerned. So what are we going to do with all the Amoraim who wore these various types of shoes on Yom Kippur? Amar Abaye says he can't prove anything from the case of Kav HaKitea. Why? Hasam over there de isbe ksisin. Abaye says that they used to put cushions between the wood of this false leg and the Kitea's own body. And therefore, that cushion made it very comfortable to wear this false limb, this Kav. Umishum Tainuk. And the reason why it's prohibited on Yom HaKippurim is even though it's not a minol, but it comes under tainuk. So we now have three categories. We've got minol, let's say a leather shoe, that's on one extreme. And then we have something that's not a minol, and it gives you no pleasure, no tainuk, it's not comfortable. You know, you can still feel the ground below you as you walk, and that's these cases of the reeds and the palm leaves. And then right in the middle, we have something that's not a minol, but yet it has the element of comfortable. It protects you from the ground because it cushions your leg, the natural limb of your body. That's called tainug. And the only case that's mutter on Yom Kippur, because it's not called nidus sandal, is something that's lacking in two conditions. It's not a minol because it doesn't have leather, and number two, it's got to fulfill a second condition. It's not tainug. There's no cushion. There are no pillows in there that cushion and make it feel comfortable. So if you're lacking tainug and it's not a minol, then it's mutter. And therefore, all these cases that we had before, the Amoraim are lacking both conditions. The case of Kiteah, who wears a kav, according to Rabbi Yossi, is prohibited on Yom Kippur, even though it's not a minol, but because it has the element of tainu. And this is going to incur the objection of Rava. Amalei Rava. Rava says, I'm not going to accept your pshat. Ve'i lav monahu, your premise is that this kav, that this false limb that's being worn by the amputee is not called a minol. He says that can't be true, because ksisim mashvei le'mono. Are you going to tell me that because you added ksisim, that makes it into a kli? In other words, into a minol. Excuse me. In other words, why are you telling me that it's usser for this, even according to Rabbi Yossi, for the kiteah to wear the kav on Yom Kippur? You're telling me because of the ksisin, because of these pillows that cushion it? How could that be? It can't be that ksisin makes it into a kli. So this line, again, I sort of stopped in the middle of a sentence here because Rav is not finished yet, but this line is completely illogical. And Rabbeinu Eliakim takes it out. Because keep in mind, Abai just said that the reason why Ksisa makes it also in Yom Kippur is because of what? Tainu. That's explicit in Abai. So this has nothing to do with Mashvile Mona. So therefore, Rabbeinu Eliakim takes out this entire sentence that starts with the word V'i, all the way up to it, including the word V'od. And he reads it like this. Amalei Rava, Rava turns to Abaye, and he says, Kol tainu delav minol hu b'yom ha-kippur mi asur. Your premise is that even if it's lacking the condition or the definition of minol, nevertheless, if it's called a tainu, it's asur on Yom Kippur. That's not true. How do I know that's not true? For Rabba Bar Rav Huna that we learned before, Havikarich Suja Akare. He tied around his foot a sudar, a kerchief, and Vinafik, and he went out on Yom HaKippurim, even though that certainly is a tainug. You know, he cushioned his foot from feeling the hardness of the ground, so that itself means tainu. And therefore, you see that as long as it's lacking the shei minol, it's mutter on Yom Kippur, despite the fact that there's a tainug. So then ksisin would not be relevant here to explain why this kav is prohibited on Yom Kippur, even according to Rabbi Yossi. The Odin, furthermore, Rava objects to Abai. I mean, Ketani Sefer. We go back to the Mishnah in Shabbos that records the Machlok Shin, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. And the Mishnah says, Im Yeshlo, Beis Kibul, Ksisin. If what they did was, in order to attach this false limb, this false foot to the kiteah, what they did is they dug a little bit of a curvature in the wood, and what they did was they added ksisin, then it has the status of what's called kli eitz, sheyesh bo beis kibul, meaning a wooden vessel that has a receptacle to it, is makabel tuma, and that's what it says here, tameh. So only in the Sefer does the Mishnah add this qualification that they added ksisin. And therefore the Mishnah wants to teach you it has the status of kliyetz, sheyesh bo beis kibul, and it's mekabel tumah, michlal, apparently in the Reisha, in the Machlokas between Reb Meir and Reb Yossi, lav b'di'isle ksisin askinin, there were no cushions. Of course, the Mishnah is telling you that if there were cushions, it's mitkabel tumah. Mashmah that until now we were talking about a kav that didn't have ksisin. So these are all the objections that Rava raises against Abaye. But now Rava has to, you know, step up to the plate and offer a different answer to figure out why the Kiteya is not allowed to wear this kav, according to Rabbi Yossi, even according to Rabbi Yossi, on Yom HaKippurim. Elama Rava li olam de kuli alma, everybody agrees. Minalhu. You don't need leather in order to constitute a minal. Even wood is a substance that's tough enough and sturdy enough to be considered a minal. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi agrees that on Yom Kippur he's not allowed to wear his false limb. And the Amoraim that walked out on Yom Kippur with Hitni and Hutzi and all the rest, they were wearing something that's not a minal at all. There was no wood and there was no leather. Ubishabis Bahapligi. The machlokas as to whether or not you're allowed to wear this on Shabbos is a different machlokas. Everybody agrees, even Rabbi Yossi, it's a minal. So imagine if somebody would tell you can't wear shoes in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. You would tell him he's crazy. Why can't I wear shoes? And the answer is, Mar, meaning Rabbi Yossi, Sovar, Gazrinon Dilma Mishtamet. Viosi Leosoye. It means that there's a gzera here of Dilma Mishtamet. You have something that's not totally attached to your body, or it's not a shoe that has, you know, a strong shoelaces, you know, that you tie down to your body. And therefore, since there's a loose connection to your body, every time he picks up his leg, there is a possibility that this false limb will fall and be disconnected from his body. Therefore, the Asi Lasuya, he's going to pick it up and he's going to carry it. Arba Amos, four Amos from Shasarabin. This, by the way, is the whole issue about spectacles, about wearing glasses in Shasarabin. At the time of the Aruch HaShulchan, this was a major, major machlokas, whether you're allowed to wear spectacles, because it might fall off, it's not attached to your body, and you'll carry it in Rosh Hashanah.
What's the glasses and the hat? The hat's more like it'll blow off, and the glasses fall off your face.
Maybe if it blows off, it'll go so far, you won't be able to carry it. I don't know. Umar Sofar and Rav Meir holds lo gazrinon. Rav Meir didn't accept the gzera. So on both sides, it sounds to me like the bottom line, I mean, he has a whole discussion in Halacha L'Maaseh, is that there are two types of substances that you can't wear on your feet, both of which constitute an isa nilas sandal, one of which is leather, and that's your classic case of a minal, and the second is, according to Rav at least, wood. Like, for example, in Holland, I think they, I don't know to this day, but in the old times, they used to wear wooden clogs, right? Wooden shoes. And that would be a minal, according to Rava. And both categories of minal are prohibited on Yom Kippur. The Nafkamina is going to be on Shabbos. You would say that if you upgrade wood to the status of minal, so you're being machmer on Yom Kippur, you're being makel on Shabbos. The answer is no. I'm not willing to be makel on Shabbos because it's not attached to my body. It's not tied down tight. I might lose it in the street and go back and pick it up and carry it. This happened to me once when I was in Oslo. You know, when I was in the Rabbanut, so they sent me down to Aza to be with my students. You know, I was a Ram and a Hezdi. So it was, the weather conditions were absolutely horrendous. It rained for 3 days straight. So what happened was, I went into a ditch. I fell into a ditch. And guess what? When I came up from the ditch, I dug myself out of this ditch that was like 6 feet of water, mud, my shoe was at the bottom of the ditch. You know? So now I wasn't going to go back to Yerushalayim without a shoe. You know, so I had to mamish go swimming, you know. I had to go fishing. I had to go fishing, you know, to get my shoe back, you know. So shoes do fall off. You know, you have to make sure your shoes are tied. That's why the Chayalim have, you know, shoelaces that go all the way up to the top. Or if you go ice skating, you know. So that's why Rabbi Yossi says you're not allowed to wear something which is a minnow on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah, because you might lose it if that minnow is not tied down properly. And that's the case of a kav for a kiteya. But the same situation is also on Yom Kippur, even according to a mayor, and the reason for that is because it's a minnow. Once the minnow, it's also on Yom Kippur. And that's what the Mishnah says. V'shavin sha'asa lo tzeis bo b'yom ha-kippur. So it's interesting when it says v'shavin sha'asa lo tzeis bo b'yom ha-kippur. Who's which of the Tanoim is the Chiddush here? Veshavim, and he admits. So according to Abaye, Veshavim means even Rav Yossi, who would say that it's not a middle and that's why it's also on Shabbos, would admit that it's also on Yom Kippur under the Isur of Nilas HaSandal. Why? Because the element of Tainu, because of the Ksisa. But if you hold like Rava, the Veshavim, the Chiddush is Rav Meir, even though Rav Meir holds that you're, the Kiteya is allowed to wear the Simchas Torah on Shabbos, which means that it's a minhag. Just 1 second. According to Rabbi Meir, that what? That you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Is with Shovin. Let me go over this one more time. Sorry.
Not concerned according to law. And we do not assur it. Rabbi Meir is not concerned that to...
Right, so just give me 1 minute, Avi. I'm sorry. You, the floor is yours, but I just want to just clear my head. I thought I had a chop over here. According to Abaye, the Chiddush is that there's an Iser of something which is not a minol, right? Rabbi Yossi holds that the Kav is not a minol, and for Desvegan he agrees that you're not allowed to wear it on Yom Kippur because of Tainuk. Okay, that's according to Abai. So certainly according to Abai, the Chiddush here of Hasavi Yom Kippur is according to Rabbi Yossi. Now, I just want to flip it around. Let's say we hold like Rava. And if we hold like Rava, then certainly it's a minol. So what's the Chiddush? Veshavin sha'asa lotzispo biyom ha-kippurim. If it's a minol. So then the Chiddush is that even though Kuli Alma, everybody agrees that it's a minol according to Rava, correct?
Yeah.
There's machlokus about this gzeira of this. So what's v'shavin? How is Rava reading the words v'shavin? Sha'asa lotzei spo biyom ha-kippur. And if it's a minol, as you might think that what? You might have thought that Rabbi Meir Rabbi Meir allows you to wear it in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos because he doesn't have the gezerah. What does it mean he doesn't have the gezerah? So Rabbi Yossi has a gezerah that maybe he's going to carry it on Shabbos. I mean, it's like a loose connection to his body, according to Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, maybe, since it's a loose connection to his body, it's not a full-fledged Nilas HaSandal on Yom HaKippur. That's the Chiddush of Veshavin. See, Abaye has one up it on Rava. Do you follow what I mean? Because according to Abaye, the Chiddush here is a great Chiddush. Rabbi Yossi says he can't wear an Rosh Hashanah because it's not what? It's not a minol. And therefore it's not a malbish, it's a masui. Comes along the Mishnah and says, afal pichein, even though it's not a minol, it's also on Yom HaKippur because of ksisin. That's according to Abaye. According to Rava, both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi agree that it is a minol, that this kav is a minol. So why do you have to tell me that asur lotzei spo biyom HaKippur? So I guess what the Gemara wants to emphasize is that maybe it's a minol as far as Shabbos is concerned, but we would think it's not a minol as far as Yom Kippur. Meaning, two definitions of minol, according to Rava. One definition of minol is that it's not a masri. It's permanently, so to speak, attached to your leg, to your foot. And therefore, you could wear it on Shabbos and there's no kshash of otzah, until the Rabbanah made the gzeir, according to Rabbi Yossi. But you would think that on Yom Kippur, even though it's a minol, it might be mutter. That's fascinating. Even though it's a minol, it might be mutter, and it's not included under the Nilas HaSandal. And I guess the reason for that is because it's not well tied down to your foot. So even though it protects you from the ground, but it's not kinderech, you know, it's not a ne'ilah kinderech shenolim, if you follow what I mean. It's not your classical Nilas HaSandal, therefore it was never included in the Iser Inui of Nilas HaSandal and Yom Kippur. That was the Havamina. And this takes us back to the case that we started with today of the Mitpachas, that there's no Iser Rechitza on Yom HaKippurim. All we have to do is circumvent the Iser Schita by squeezing out some of the water. But even though there's some moisture left, I can wipe my eyes and my face with this kerchief, because that's not the Derech Rechitza. So in other words, what we're saying is that there's another halacha in five inuyim, and as there's another condition that has to be met in order to qualify as an Iser Inu and Yom Kippur, it has to be done kiderech, the way most people do it. So this kav is only kiderech for a kitea, but it's not kiderech for you and I, because we don't attach false limbs to our body, Baruch Hashem, right? We have to thank Hashem every day for that. I wrote alerts al moyim, and or osali called tzarki, I should say, right? And therefore, for us, this would, even though the cheft itself is a minol, and therefore it's, you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos because it's not a masu, it's a minol. But on the other hand, it's not a minol as far as derech levisha is concerned in minolim to constitute a violation of the iser inu of nilas hasan. That was the havamin. And kamash malon v'shavin shasal latzeis bo, that this definition of minol is sufficient to engender an iser nilas hasan on Yom Kippur, despite the fact that it's not the normal way people wear shoes. Tana rabbanon. What about children? Do I have to make sure that my very young child, who's less than the age of chinuch, should not wear shoes on Yom Kippur? Sorry. Go ahead. Is Tana Rabbanan tinokos mutarim bekulon? Chutz minilas hasandal. So it doesn't bother me if these children will wash their bodies on Yom Kippur. It doesn't, because again they didn't reach the age of chinuch. It doesn't bother me if they smear themselves with oil on Yom Kippur. But what bothers me if they wear shoes on Yom Kippur. Maishna nilas a sandal. Why should that be different? The amri inshi, because when a person sees these children wearing shoes on Yom Kippur, is he, the spectator comes to the mistaken impression is avdule, that he, the child, was not able to put his shoes on. He's too young. And who put the shoes on for the child? Who tied the shoes on to the child's foot? It was the adult. It was the gadol. And there's a separate halacha that a gadol is not allowed to do this to a katan, even if he hasn't reached the age of chinuch. This is sugyan yevamos kuf yudalid. The Gemara derives it from lo sa'achlem, lo sa'chilum, that you're not allowed to feed a child non-kosher food. And here also, you're not allowed to put shoes on a child on Yom Kippur. And here we have a case where the child himself put his own shoes on, but the people don't know that, and therefore they suspect the adult of putting it on. Fekta Gemara, I don't understand. Hanach, Nami, Amri, Inshi, Avdile. Won't the spectator come to the same mistake conclusion with regard to Rechitz and Sicha and say that it was the adult, the parent, who washed his child or smeared oil on his child? The Gemara answers, no. Rechitz of his Sicha, it's possible, Amar, to sue Me'esmal, Avdile, that the Gdolim washed them yesterday. There's no indication that it's fresh. New Fekta Gemara, Sandal Nami, maybe they put the shoes on yesterday. Gemara answers, Amar Me'esmal, Avdilei. So Gemara answers, the Omer Shmuel, Haiman Deboy, Lemitam, Time in the Misus. If you want to get a taste of death, Lisayim Misone Veligne, put on your shoes and go to sleep. No, those people don't sleep with their shoes. The Gemara says, Vamutarim Lechat Chilok Tani. In other words, even if the father, just 1 second. Oh, so if you're telling me that with regard to Rechitza and Sicha, no one's going to come to the mistaken conclusion that the father washed his child on Yom Kippur. Vamutarim lechat chiluk tani. The lashon of the brisa. Let's go back to the brisa. Says tinokos mutarim bekulon. Mutarim sounds like it means that the father is allowed to wash the child. Mm-hmm. And now you're telling me that for sure is asur. Ella. So the Gemara says no. Which there's a more fundamental distinction between Rechitza Sicha on the one hand and Nilas Sandal on the other. Hanach, with regard to Nilas Sandal, Lav Revisayhu, it's not absolutely necessary for the growth of the child to wear shoes, meaning he could wear slippers, he could wear sneakers. Is there for Gazru Bei Rabbanon? The Rabbanon wanted to make sure that the child wouldn't wear shoes because people would assume that the father put the shoes on the child or the mother put. But Hanach, with regard to Rechitz and Sicha, Derev Nisaihu, who it's necessary for the health of the child, is there for Lo Gazru Bei Rabbanon? The Rabbanon did not make a gzera to prevent the child from washing himself or anointing himself on Yom HaKippurim. The only question I have is, would the Gadol himself be allowed to do that for them? So the Ran says that the Gadol is allowed to wash the child because the child needs this washing for, or the Sicha for its growth, as we're going to soon demonstrate. But the Meiri says that no, the Gadol is not allowed to do it. The Gzera that the onlooker will come to the mistaken conclusion that the God will wash the cotton, that we don't have to worry about. That the Rabbanan alleviated that gzera because of the health of the child. But to go ahead and actively wash the child, that's us.
My Meiri says just the opposite.
I'm sorry, just the opposite. So maybe it's the Ran who's, did I mix up the names?
Meiri says, and if a parent asks, may he feed and wash the child, we say to him, feed and wash him, see the Meiri. We tell the parent to feed and wash the child on Yom Kippur. Actively participate. Evidently, then, the reason for ruling leniently in this case of washing is not because one assumes the child was washed yesterday, for in this case, the adult who washes the child knows that the child is being washed today on Yom Kippur.
But is there a day that says that the parent can't do this to the child? That's what I thought.
I don't see this such a footnote here.
Okay.
Well, not in this one.
Okay, so I guess I was wrong about that. So even the Gadol is allowed to do it for the child. They never...
We tell him to go and do it.
Right.
Feed, and we tell him go wash and feed him, quoting...
For the health of the child.
The health of the child, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so I apologize. Thank you for pointing that out.
It's just the footnote here.
He says, "Re'ei Yalkut Bikurin Biurin." If you give me just 1 minute,
yeah, sure.
I want to see if I invented this. Oh, let's see. Lo mefurish pasugim heter rechitz v'sichukak at shigil gil chinuch or afilu k'tanim shigil gil chinuch gam kemutam. Ah, this is a whole different shaila.
That's different.
Oh, im also legadol lirchotz the lasu chesakatan. Oh,
okay.
Let's see if anyone says what I said, unless I just invented it. Okay, he says the following: Pirush Rashi shimboli molech omrim lo hachileu urechotzo. So mevur b'divrei Rashi shel maskonas haGemara gadol yochel lasus lekatan biyadayim kol advarim shem litzorach gidulo shalatin v'chein kosev aran shemuchach b'gemara shemutarim gdolim la'achilom la'ashkosam ul'rachitzam ul'socham v'tzorach biur halo b'gemara b'yavamis osu l'gadol lisfos isu l'katan af she'ein ha'kat mitzu v'dov v'filo agil gil chinuch v'lom zem mipos lo'sach lo'sachilu v'hazi gdolim al-ketan v'rashi atzmo evi drosh zuliel. So he asks that as a question. Yeshachronim shekosish lo shaych iso lisfos lekotn el bedovishu osu bi etzem al rechitza v'sicha ein dvarim shasu bi etzem el sha'anu mitzuvim biyom kippah ala inui v'gabi kotn she'enu mitzuvim lis'anos ein kan iso klal. There's no cheft of iso here. Abeis Yosef kosh shafilu das asov sheshari inuim doraisim mikomakom kevin she'enu mifurashim b'mikra dinom kal mosrim chachomim ha'kosv l'chachom l'hokil kevin shurchitz tzichu l'tzorch gidul shol tino ki kilu b'em chachomim v'aloch ha'kosv abeis Yosef shedas ha'tur. Oh, Baruch Hashem, so I'm not totally crazy. No, I thought I, you know, I began to think that I invented this. He says, Kosav HaBeis Yosef, Kosav HaBeis Yosef, Shedas HaTur, again, we're not going to pascha like the tour, but She'ein L'Gadol Lirchotz Es HaKotem B'Atzmo. El Yomar L'Nochri Shir, yeah, against Rashi. And then he says that the Magen Avraham reinterprets the Tur, that the Tur is talking about a case where he's washing the child with chamin, with hot water, which is also on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, and has nothing to do with Inui Rechitza. So even that day on the Tur is a matter of controversy whether the Tur actually said such a thing. So let's see if we can just finish this last few lines here. On Ayin Chesem and Beis, the Gemara says, the Omar Abaye. Now the Gemara wants to prove and substantiate how important it is for a child to be washed properly and to be smeared with oils. So Abaye said, Omar Li Aim. Aim is my
Nursemaid,
okay, that's a good omenet, it's called in Hebrew. Revise dienuka, it's important for a child, b'maya chamimi, to be washed in hot water, or warm water. Not too hot, of course. He says, mutal lirchot satinuk afilu b'chamim, v'afagav damrinon b'shabas kuflu dalo itir rechitzas gufo b'mayim chamim. He says, Yeshlom Hashem Medubur Kan Lirchotz Yodav V'Raglov V'Lo Kol Gufo Oshi Yirchitzu Osal Yidei Nochri Tosarash. So the Gemara, the Tosarash is assuming that when Abai is being quoted here in this sugyat, you know, in the name of his nurse, of his nursing mother, that she would wash it. It was very important to wash him in hot water. It's referring to, the Gemara is assuming that even on Yom Kippur you wash the child in hot water. Umishcha, and to take oil and smear it into the child, gadal purta, and when the child gets a little bit older, is biyasa the kutcha, we should make sure that he eats an egg with some cheese or some sour cream, something, the milk product, and that'll strengthen his body. Gadal purta, when he gets a little bit older, tabure money, we give him money al kalim, taburi means to break, right? The tough replaces the shin in Aramaic, like tlas is shalosh, right? And this is also going to somehow contribute to his development. Ki hada rabba, zovin lehu money, he used to buy kalim gzize, I guess they were broken kalim or used kalim, to parcha levne. They were made of earthenware and they were cracked. Umistabilu, I guess he bought him cheap, and he gave it to the child or the young adult, and the young adult would, I guess, take it apart. It was like a puzzle, you know, where you take a piece apart, and we when we were kids, we used to. I mean, I wasn't great at this, but we used to build ships. Do you remember that? The what were they called?
Models,
right? Models, you know, model ships, model airplanes. Mm-hmm. So that somehow develops the mind or develops the mechanical skills of the child. Is there another way of learning this, Gemara? Why would he give
something that we would never do today with our children, buy inexpensive plates for them and let them throw it and smash it?
Well, why would that be healthy for the child? I mean, unless the child is full of anger and wants to let his anger, it's not clear.
That's something I would.
All right, so let's make a note of it. If on Thursday you're around, we can try to get together to talk about Hamelech Vahakala.
Okay,
I'm going to make a note of it.
Right here.
What does the Kita mean?
Kita is kitea, it should be. Maybe. Kitea. Kitea. Kitea is a person whose leg was amputated.
Amputee.
Yeah. Amputee.
Okay. Not Shikaya.
Shikaya. Okay.
Yeah. He got through the amputee, that was tough.
Yeah. Well, the Nitilus Rishus on the Het Bechoros, that's the most difficult.